Thanks for tuning in to the Boiler Express podcast. Join us each week as we dive into all things Purdue sports. You'll hear in-depth analysis of our previous and upcoming games, as well as interviews with players and people involved in the Purdue sports fandom. Be sure to check us out on Twitter and YouTube for our live stream shows as well.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Boiler Express podcast. We've got four out of the five tonight, so we are almost a full house. But we've got some Purdue football and basketball to talk about tonight, mostly basketball, because to be honest, I mean, there was a football game potentially, supposedly, in Columbus, Ohio that Purdue participated in. You guys all know what the score is. There's not really a whole lot to talk about. We move on. Basketball, however, on the other hand, we're 3-0. We've had some pretty close. The game against Yale was close, but, you know, pretty good games, pretty competitive. We were able to see, you know, what this team is kind of made of and what they're potentially going to be able to develop into. So I guess the first game we'll start off with is, I'm trying to think of who, Northern Kentucky. That's right. They played Northern Kentucky.
Corpus Christi. We'll start there.
Oh, I thought we already talked about Corpus Christi.
Yeah, we did. Yeah, man, my memory. We talked about that last week. Yeah.
Oh, you're good.
Of year with football and basketball, it all just blends together.
It's a lot. We're all just trying so hard to forget about football. We're just like, no. So played a game against Northern Kentucky. Was a really good game. I thought it highlighted a lot of, Braden Smith is. He's just fantastic. And, you know, we're seeing a lot of other guys step up and step into new roles as well. So what did you guys think about the game overall?
Honestly, I thought it was kind of a boring game. I thought it was kind of just a bland game.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a game that Purdue won by 22. It was a game that it felt like Purdue could have won by 32. It was really slow. I mean, when I look at the stats, one of the big things that jumps off is 60 possessions for Purdue, which is super low. I mean, I think last year we averaged 70, but just a slow, you know, grinder of a game.
It was like a methodical game.
Yeah, it was very methodical. I think a lot of that had to do with Northern Kentucky, the way they play defense, the way they try to position themselves between the man and the ball, which is called on the line, up the line, or they dropped into zone a few times. I mean, just – and then they kind of went into that matchup zone, and so we didn't get to see a ton of the, like, Purdue – offensive, like, misdirection ridden sets that we're used to seeing. We just kind of saw some get the ball in the middle, kick it out, get the ball in the middle, kick it out, okay, someone's gonna shoot, you know, type of offense. But yeah, I thought it was a good game. I thought Northern Kentucky was really good. They brought the energy and the intensity, and it was kind of a wake-up call for the younger guys. But I think the big thing to take away from that game was the unfortunate injury to Daniel Jacobson.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it was a big loss. Like, I mean,
literally
7'4" loss.
Yeah. Well played. I feel like Jacobson was really. Where'd I get the hoodie from? The bookstore or from the team store?
Jacobson.
No one would have distracted us. You're not even on the pod, and you're gonna.
Yeah, Jesus. Yeah, Jacobson, I felt like he was starting to kind of feel his way into it and starting to not figure things out because it's only his second game. But ultimately, it just felt like he was figuring that out, and it's really unfortunate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I said it during the not to bounce around to games or anything, but during the Yale game, I kind of made the comment of, you know, obviously, this team has a lot of talent, but I think you, without the presence of our two-time National Player of the Year, you can see how much Zach Edey and, you know, Mason Gillis and Ethan Morton as well, but how much those guys lifted others up around them and made them look really, really good as well. I know we've got a lot of freshmen that are coming here and taking those roles, but I don't know. Sometimes watching the games, it's almost like, I mean, you're seeing a lot of freshmen get in there and get decent minutes and trying to figure it out and, like, remember all the plays and remember, and you know what to do and keep up with the pace of Division I college basketball. So it's weird to, cause it, from looking at it, just like with your eyeball, the eyeball test, which we all know is completely 100% valid and never shows you wrong.
Not subjective at all. 100%.
it feels like Purdue's, in my opinion, Purdue's taken a pretty big dip. I don't think that's the case, but it from just like watching the games, I'm like, oh, this is like a pretty big difference. And I don't think I was like mentally prepared for that this year for some reason, even though I knew all those changes were coming.
Yeah, I'm going to get out in front of this, especially since Dylan's in the comments. I like Taco Bell just like Chris does, and I got a little aggressive today.
What the
and
hell?
Bit the crap out of my tongue. So if you notice a little bit of dialect today.
Dude.
But no, another thing to keep in mind about this schedule so far is we are still scheduling the best low majors we can find, which sounds kind of like redundant, sounds kind of ridiculous, but we're scheduling teams that play in the tournament. Yale beat Auburn last year, and Auburn's a top 15 team going into this season. You know, so these aren't like scrub teams, and we are replacing a lot. We have a lot of freshmen and sophomores playing a lot of minutes. And so to me, I haven't really felt nervous in any of the three games because it feels like we get this lead and then we start to try some things. We try some lineups. We try to get this person involved. And then the team gets close. And so what do? We bang in a couple threes, push the lead back up. You know, so like I haven't really felt nervous. Yeah, we aren't blowing teams out the way we might like to, but I feel like they're still feeling some things out and they're not necessarily emptying the bench the way we have in the past. So last year, you know, I looked at our bench points per game last year in the season. We averaged 16 points per game on the season in bench points. You know what we've averaged through three games?
Nine.
I can only imagine.
I'm going to go with nine. Go ahead, Frank.
26.7.
26. So we're up
you
10
stupid
points.
Cal.
Now, we did average quite
ABB
a few.
ABB Analytics.
Yeah, that's where I got it from. That's when I asked you for the credentials today. I wanted to look up those numbers. But last season, we did average we had more bench points for through the first three games. But that was also because we were getting guys like Will Berg, who ended up not really being a rotational piece, 6, 8, 10 points off the bench. Sam King was dropping in points off the bench. Waddell was dropping in points off the bench. This year, like you saw against Yale, all the bench points were Colvin, Heidi, and CJ Cox. So it's literally we're sticking to our rotation still to make sure we can get them going. And I think that's more the focus right now than it is let's beat this team by 30 points.
Right. Yeah, I mean, and it's nice to look at the stat sheet or the box score and just see that we've got multiple guys, like more than three and four guys all scoring in double digits. So, you know, it's nice to know that it's not all going to be relied on one.
Am I crazy or was there one game we had like six players in double digits? Was that against Corpus Christi?
I mean,
I thought I saw something.
The amount of times we've scored 90 plus. I'm pulling it up here. Computer's being a little bit slow here.
I feel like Corpus Christi was we had like six players in double figures and like three with 20 plus.
With that, without bouncing around too much here, against Yale, we had 1, 2, 3, 4 guys in double figures. One of those guys had 22. One had 17. So there's a good chunk right there.
But yes, six in double figures. Yep.
Yeah, sorry. I got on a tangent there. It was just interesting.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, we're going to see a little bit more. I mean, we're going to have to see a little bit more balance this season.
Yeah.
We're used to seeing Zach Edey come in and just I've used the word cheat code, but he basically was a cheat code. He was there's 5 seconds left on the shot clock. Give the ball to him and let him do his thing. And, you know, he was a 70% 2-point shot. And right now this team doesn't have a 70% shot, a 2-point shot. They just don't have that right now. And, you know, it's just an entirely different DNA of this roster. And I just think that we're just still trying to figure out some things, but I think Purdue found something on the in the lineup that I'm going to jump to you for a second here, but the lineup that closed out that game, right? And in a close game, so who was it? It was Braden, Fletch, Cam, Miles, TKR at the five, right?
Yeah,
I think that lineup to me was really interesting. Then they
who was the four? Really good things. Sorry.
Cam okay. Heidi, and then CJ Cox is in there.
CJ Cox, that's what was
at
the
end too as well.
And see, that's one, and that's where I've always said, and I think I said this like when we kind of previewed basketball, but I think that I've always been surprised that TKR hasn't been the five, even though we had a 7-4 guy and a 7-2 guy. TKR just has the footwork and the movement for us to be able to do so many more things that we couldn't do with Edie, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and did anyone hear what TKR had to say in the press conference after the game?
I didn't hear it verbatim, but I think you talked about it a little bit where he's really, you know, he's very openly talking to Painter about him playing the five and kind of playing a faster, smaller starting lineup.
And I was surprised because you don't normally hear players talk about what they want to that degree. I guess I'm not necessarily saying he went over Painter's head, but you don't have players in the press conference say, I think we need to change up what we're doing. Here's what I think we should do and why. I can't remember ever hearing that from a player.
Especially at Purdue.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's what I'm... I mean, you see it all the time in the NBA, but TKR came out and said, like, I feel like we are best when I play the five. I like playing the five. And defensively, that would allow us to switch one through five, which and he said he's been really trying to push Painter to give it a try. But I just thought that was bold. I mean, bold's probably the best word for it, in my opinion. Bold of him to say, because there's all sorts of conversations that happen behind closed doors, but to kind of put that out there, you know, into the ethos and the media world was interesting. But I don't hate the idea, though.
Super like it. I think that was kind of my thought the whole time with TKR being at the five, is you can rotate or you can switch one through five. You can, you know, do all sorts of things that really, and nothing against Edie, obviously, but stuff we just couldn't do with Edie the way we were playing him.
So let me ask you this then. Our next opponent, Alabama, starts two guys at 6'11", one that we're obviously familiar with, we played him last year in non-conference, but also a fellow by the name of Cliff Amore that you might be familiar with. So, you know, considering they're starting two pretty big dudes, do you think there's even a chance Painter decides to put Kaufman Wren at the five and start Heidi at the four or something? Like, to me, I don't think there's any chance. I think the reason he likes putting Berg or had Jacobson in the lineup to start the game was because he needs somebody that's physical on defense, similar to the way IU kind of protected TJD, Trace Jackson Davis, that you need somebody that's a big body that can help defensively to take the impact in the paint without worrying about getting your top scorer in foul trouble.
Yeah, I think that how tall's Heidi? He's like 6'10", right?
Heidi? No, he's like 6'8".
Really?
6'7". Yeah, 6'7".
He just looks taller on TV, I guess. I still think that maybe it's just his arms, huge wingspan. I don't know. Anyway, I think you could see him do that small lineup with Heidi at the four and TKR at the five and just at least to start out that way. Now,
I'm saying, so you feel comfortable with Heidi starting the game guarding Cliff Amore in the post?
Yeah, because Heidi has gotten so much thicker. He's just put on so much more mass.
Okay, let me change the name then, since maybe Cliff Amore is not as familiar, but put Heidi on, let's say, Caleb Swanigan in the post. Do you think Heidi's going to stop him?
Not many people could stop Caleb Swanigan,
right,
though.
Yeah.
Just to be fair.
I mean, I don't think that's an apples-to-apples comparison. Okay.
Yes.
So I think Heidi is up to the task. I will put it that way. Sure, he gives up some height, but I think he's...
It's our most athletic lineup.
Yeah.
So,
I don't know. Honestly, I think with that lineup too, you can outrun him.
I mean, I admire the optimism, but I watch this Alabama team play, and they're tough. They're good.
I mean, they're two in the country for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to be like last year where I go into it like, 100%, we're going to rock them. I think it's going to be, I could easily see it be like I think Nick said in our group chat, the biggest thing that I enjoy here is that it's at Mackey, and Mackey's going to be full tilt on a Friday night, going just bananas.
Yeah, I mean we'll talk about Alabama for a minute here. They haven't shot the ball well from three, and that's
really
that scares me about this game.
Yeah, because they'll
wait till Friday.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly. That's why I'm afraid, because you know Mark Sears is a great shooter. I think we know that from. I'm trying to figure out what their 3-point percentage is.
How are we defensively against the three? I've only been able to catch parts of games because, you know, life. But it seems like we have done an okay job running people off the 3-point line.
Well, so Alabama's shooting 30% from three this season, which puts them in the 30th percentile. Again, only three games in. But they were hoisting him, you know, against McNeese the other night. There was no stopping them. So our opponents have shot 27.9% from three this season. I mean, there's a school of thought in terms of how you look at 3-point defense, and that your opponent's 3-point percentage isn't a good way to measure 3-point defense, because the best way to deter a 3-point shot is to run people off the line, like you just said, and convert those 3-point shots into tough contested twos. So so I don't, it's that's a difficult thing to measure, but I mean, I can think off the top of my head, probably four shots from the game against Yale that were great contested shots, especially at the end that just went in.
Yeah.
So.
That just seems like our bugaboo, right? Like we always have that issue where like they're like hand, you know, Zach Edey 7-4 against a guy who's 5-8. And friggin' they dump a 3-point in there at the last second of the shot clock.
Right. Or like, what was it, Northern Kentucky? That guy that like jumped into, I don't know if it was like TKR or Braden or Fletch, somebody, they like, they tried to draw a foul there at the end to like in the half or something. And he just, or the end of the shot clock, and he made just some wild circle.
Yeah.
But what does concern me with, you know, them having the two bigs, especially Clifford Morey for Alabama, is that Purdue got out rebounded by Yale. And maybe I'm not looking enough into that. Maybe I'm just reading the name and being like, oh, that's concerning, but that's concerning.
Yeah. So, I mean, Purdue has struggled rebounding all season so far through three games. They haven't been great. So some numbers associated with that. So against, where's the box? So, against Corpus Christi, Purdue had 39 rebounds to their 27. So things looked okay there. But seven offensive rebounds for Corpus Christi in that particular game. Now, against Northern Kentucky, I think the story was a little bit different. Looking at it here, Purdue had 33 total rebounds to their 33 total rebounds. So they were a match there. But Northern Kentucky had 15 offensive rebounds to Purdue's 8. And so this is a team, Purdue, that we're used to seeing dominate people on the offensive glass, absolutely dominate people, and that just hasn't been the case this season. And then against Yale, I think it was an even bigger. Purdue had 5 offensive rebounds to their 11, and rebounds dead even at 31.
So is it that we're not doing well, or we're just so used to dominating that we've caught water with the rest of the?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So an offensive rebounding percentage this season, Purdue is 28% offensive rebound percentage, which is in the 42nd percentile. So just below average on that. So we have gone from an elite, you know, top three offensive rebounding team in the country to, you know, slightly below average, I'll say. And that's, for me, Damon, I think your concern is very, very valid.
And it's just weird, though. I feel like, too, again, going just off purely off of eyeballs here, just watching the first two games, it's like I feel like Purdue just ran into like a lot of just really long like rebounds, like the shots that like they bounce off the rim and then they go like beyond the arc and the other team comes away with it, or like they're tipping it. So it's like, it's not like they're not contesting for it or fighting for it. I feel like we're just not winning those battles when it comes to like the tips and snagging those rebounds and everything.
Yeah, I mean, I think like longer shots are going to have longer rebounds, and that's something that Painter talks about, and Braden I know has talked about a lot too. And that's Purdue drills that. They drill long rebounds, and they drill anticipating based on where the shot's coming from, where it's going to bounce, and that's just something that you have to develop a feel for. That's why Braden is such a good rebounder, and he's usually the shortest guy on the court, is because he just has a knack and an intuition for where that ball's going to go.
I was going to say, it's funny you say that, because our leading rebounder this year is
Braden. Okay. Well, and against Yale, Braden, Cam, and Miles seem like the only three guys who wanted that rebound. I mean, not knocking on Burke, not knocking on First, not knocking on Burgess, but like there is some bouncing and some juggling and some, you know, I'm going to tip this ball up and, oh, look, the Yale player got it, you know, things like that. But like Cam, especially toward the end, I mean, he was coming up and rebounding with authority. I mean, he rebounded like his life depended on it. Mm-hmm. And so it's, you know, rebounding's a skill. It is. And there was a couple times with Burgess in particular where I saw him like box out his man, like in the wrong direction. You know, so again, that's the anticipation. That's understanding that, you know, there's a good chance the ball goes to the weak side, and just anticipation. And you know, and that just comes with time. It just comes with a whole lot of time.
It's got to be hard to be a freshman at Purdue coming off of a national championship run. But I was looking up some stats here. Braden's almost averaging a double-double. He's at 15 points and 9.3 rebounds per game. So that's pretty crazy.
And I think that Braden has shown
assists, 9.3 assists per game.
Not rebounds, neither of those would surprise me, assists or rebounds with him. But
he's at 6.3 rebounds.
He's shown that, you know, if you hedge him, if you put two on the ball, he I mean, like he did in the first game, he's going to get 15 assists. Mm-hmm. And if you play drop coverage, he's going to make you pay. So that was the story last season with him. And I just think that it's growing even stronger this year. But let's talk about Cody's question here for a second. Should we start worrying about the sloppiness this early in the season? That's a good question, Cody. And I feel like, if memory serves me right, we've had some form of this conversation the last two seasons. Mm-hmm. But I mean, it's been a while. It's been a while since Purdue's been rotating four freshmen. I think it was the Gillis, Morton, Ivy, Edie class the last time. So that was 2020, because their first game was against Liberty, and that was the everyone separated on the bench wearing masks and that sort of weird, like the commentary wasn't actually present, you know, game. So it was that long ago, the last time Purdue was rotating four freshmen. And so, I mean, every season we start off and we say, you know, we're a little sloppy, we could tighten things up here or there. But I mean, right now we just have a lot of young guys, and I'm not concerned about it. I mean, I do think that we should probably point out the teams we played aren't gimme teams by any stretch. I mean, these are KenPom top 150 teams. These are teams who, and the difference between a KenPom 150 and a KenPom 250 or KenPom 300, like the school down south has been playing, is huge. It's very, very huge. And so, yes, you can look at it and say, oh, they're a mid-major, but not all mid-majors are created equal. And, you know, these teams we played are good teams. Like Russ said, Yale knocked off Auburn. So, I'm not worried too much about it, but I mean, the true test is coming Friday. We're going to learn a lot about this team on Friday. Cody says that crowd control is going to be a factor. If we can keep the crowd loud, Bama doesn't stand a chance. I hope you're right, Cody.
And did you hear, not to cross over too much, but did you guys hear Rick Carlisle, Pacers head coach, his comment about
the
Pacers atmosphere? Maybe could channel some of that with some angry Purdue football fans packing Mackey in a big time game. I mean, I'm just saying.
So yeah, I will say this, that like I think I get where Cody's coming at from. This is because it's very much a there are teams in the Big Ten who play at Purdue once a year that can't get used to Mackey Arena. I don't think an SEC team that, let's be frank, outside of Rupp Arena.
I'd love to be frank.
You what?
I said I would love to be frank.
Yeah, I know. I mean, let's the outside maybe Rupp Arena and maybe Arkansas. Arkansas is pretty wild.
So I've got not I got like a to lot tell you about Rupp. It's that place is like going to church.
Is it really?
Yeah, they pack it. They pack it. But
it's very
when they say, hey, make a lot of noise because we're going to get the decibel meter out. It does. But when I went to a game there against Tennessee, and I think both of them were ranked, and it was a pretty much 6 to 7 point game the whole game, and it never got loud. The loudest it got was when they brought out their award-winning cheerleading squad that did that big pyramid thing.
Yeah.
Other than that, it was like a very corporate, like
golf claps,
reserved, nervous crowd, nervous energy, not like an explosive energy.
Right. Yeah. So the point I'm trying to get at is that I just don't think that Alabama could be ready for a Mackey Arena.
Yeah, I just think these guys. So Mark Sears is a senior. He's been in college forever. Is the second.
You mean Braden's little brother?
What's that?
Braden's little brother. Yeah, from last year. Yeah.
Grant Nelson has also been in college for 7 years now. Zach Eady's little brother. Yeah. Latrell Reitzel has been in college for a long time. He's coming off the bench. Cliff Amore.
10 years. Yeah,
he needs no introduction. You know, all these guys, minus Amore, you know, played in a Final Four last year. I just believe that these guys, you know, as they say, have ice in their veins and aren't going to be as rattled as some other people are. We'll see. We'll see. But, you know, the main thing that stuck out to me about Alabama when I watched them is their depth. I mean, they are just constantly shoveling guys in and taking guys out. And they're just so interchangeable, especially defensively. But it's going to be a fun game. It's going to be a really, really fun game.
Oh, yeah.
I'm excited. I think we're going to learn a lot about Braden Smith. We're going to see how he handles their ball pressure. He played against them last year, but you know, you had that easy pressure. Outlet. You had that easy outlet and just throwing it to Zach. But one thing that did give them trouble was McNeese. They did two things. They switched 1 through 5, and it basically negated everything Alabama was trying to do. They tried to run a ton of get action, which is basically the point guard throwing the ball out to a big and then immediately following his pass for a handoff. That didn't really work out. McNeese dropped into his zone occasionally. That got him a little messed up and discombobulated. I feel like zone's coming back, by the way.
I've noticed that too.
Seems to be like everywhere.
There's going to be a guy who's been saying Purdue should play the zone for like 10 years. He's going to be like, see, I told you.
Did you notice in the exhibition game that we ran a little bit of zone?
Against Creighton?
Not against Creighton, the other one.
No, I know we did against Creighton. I don't remember in the other
Grand one. Valley.
Yeah. Only for like Grand two. Valley,
yeah. Yeah, but it was still weird to see. I was like, meh.
It was weird to see. But I don't know. You got to, as the youth like to say, I trust Matt Painter. So we'll just have to do what.
What else am I going to do?
Yeah, what else? What else can you do? But
I think the positive too is that getting to a national championship game last year has now bought Painter more credibility, maybe. If that's the right word.
Well, I feel like the monkey's off the back.
Yeah.
If that's what you're I mean.
Yeah. Yeah.
He has more clout, right? He's like he can be more comfortable in what he's trying to do.
Yeah, and I mean in a way of like if things are a little rocky, people aren't going to have their heads explode.
Did you guys see Nate Oates made a comment about how basically kind of insinuating that they're part of the reason that Mackey's sold out Friday?
Yeah. Yeah, that was funny.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, and watching their game the other night.
3 years of sellouts now?
Yeah. And watching their game the other night was one of the things I noticed was that their stadium was maybe 50% full. Alabama's who I'm talking about, but yeah, the way he said it was, I'm not immediately going to assume that they're selling out because of us there, but like that's the possibility or something. I'm like, yeah, man, like you,
what a douche.
Yeah, we sold out against Corpus Christi, dude. Come on,
yeah.
I hope very early on the PA announcer's like, and Mackey is sold out for the 68th straight time or whatever the streak is at now.
Yeah. Like, oh, I don't know. Like, Nate Oates just gets under my skin.
Yeah, he does. Yeah.
If it wasn't for Mr. Hurley, he'd probably be my least liked.
It's a 1 and 1A between those two jack-o'-lanterns.
Well, no, I love his X's and O's. I love the way he runs his offense. I was going to say something
wildly ignorant, but I was like, yeah, I probably should.
I love the way he recruits guys who play his system, but man, just the way he's handled
good shooters.
Yeah, he does get good shoot. Yeah, the way he's handled some of the off the court issues is what I don't like about him.
Yeah, and the last thing I'll say nice about him too is props to his scheduling, because really his non-conference is us, then Illinois, then Houston, then Rutgers, then North Carolina, and then Creighton.
Yeah,
what's their Notre next Dame in there too? So.
And I don't think Notre Dame's a pushover. They look like they could be.
No, Notre Dame's ranked 77.
They got the Shrews, Meister.
Shrews doing really well up there.
And they're recruiting well. Man, that'd be crazy to see Notre Dame take over as the second best basketball school in the state of Indiana.
Would they take
if only we had the Crossroads Classic.
Yeah. Well, one thing I thought we could do is we could go through each of the newcomers and talk about what we've seen, what we've liked, maybe what they can work on, and just talk through that a little bit. You guys open to that?
Yeah, absolutely.
You guys will probably have a better idea than I will. I'll just kind of go off of what I've seen.
No, I understand. You got your hands full with lots of small children and work and all that. So you get it.
It's like a hurricane through here. I'm just kind of hanging out until either the roof caves in or I survive.
So starting off, I'm just going from the top down. This is in no order. Raleigh Burgess. What do you guys think?
Purdue has to take better pictures of that poor bastard.
Oh, yeah.
Holy crap. Yeah.
Chris is like, I'm going to let you guys talk. Pictures!
So for anyone who hasn't seen the continued pictures that Purdue basketball social media posts of Raleigh Burgess, it's always like while his face is in motion. So imagine you have your camera in front of you and you just shake your head back and forth as fast as you can and you take pictures throughout. Like that's what they look like. And one of them, it looked like he was wearing another human being's face. I mean, I know that's grim, but that's just what it looks like.
Raleigh's going to be like, oh, these guys, I heard these guys talking about me on their podcast. Let me check it out. Let me see what they're saying here. Oh,
okay. Raleigh's got some internet crawler out. Where
I'll bring it back a little bit and I'll say he might be my favorite of the four. Not necessarily that I think he's going to have the biggest impact or be the best player long-term, but, you know, and I know he's got his issues where Painter's saying like 3 to 4 to 5 minutes and then got to come out because of the conditioning. But when he's in there, he leaves it on the court. Like he is like flying around as much as he can, getting involved as much as he can. They trust him obviously to pass the ball. They're putting him in these high ball screen actions and these dribble handoff actions where they trust his decision-making and his passing. And so I have high hopes for him. I, you know, get in shape, big fella. Work on getting your breathing under control when you get to the free throw line so we can capitalize on when you draw those fouls. But I'm not down on him. You know, I think he's got a lot of room to develop, but I think I see some pieces.
Yeah, I think he's going to be good. He has that lunch pail mentality that I super enjoy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree with that.
Purdue guy, you know. He and I know this is way too early, but the first impression gives me very much like a Grady Eifert, Ethan Morton, lunch pail kind of, or Mason Gillis, the kind of lunch pail, come in, go to work, do your thing mentality. You know what I mean? Just early thoughts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just think his conditioning. I was really surprised to hear Painter say that he's very similar to Isaac Haas and that he has like a 3 to 4 minute max.
That's what I was going to say. It's not the first time Purdue's dealt with having to get a big man in shape, and I trust them to get it done. Yeah. Especially with Jacobson being down, it might happen within this season, not just
he's going to go from his
sophomore or junior year. He's going to have to figure it out this year.
Yeah. So next up on the list, going top down, CJ Cox.
That kid is the epitome of a diamond in the rough,
isn't he?
I love that he fell in our lap.
I just the recruiting story from Painter is amazing.
I mean, I love it too because it's like, this 4-star, you know, that I'm trying to recruit is kind of dragging his feet. So like, what are you doing? You know what I mean?
How you doing?
Come on down.
Right.
Yeah, he's scrappy, man. And mm-hmm. I mean, talk about a guy. I mean, and I'm this is true for both these guys. CJ Cox leaves it all on the court as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, and
he gives me a little Carson Edwards light vibes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. To me, I mean, I compared him to Jaden Ivey light, mm-hmm. but just with a little bit less stopping and staring at the ref for not giving you the call that you
I was gonna say someone on here is gonna say, but he gets steals on defense, so he plays defense. So.
Hey,
yeah. And I mean, he's 6'3", so he's a little closer to Jaden Ivey's height, but. Yeah, you know, my wife said something last night. He was at the line shooting free throws, and she was like, "Is he a transfer?" I'm like, "No." Like, she's like, "He looks like he doesn't look like a freshman. Like,
he's just built
the way his body, the way he composes himself. Like, she's like, he doesn't look like timid or afraid." And like, no, he's 18, and she just couldn't believe that. So
yeah, I like him a lot. I think that. He's the steal of that class, or he's, you know, not that he is going to be Braden impactful, but I could see him be that type of, you know, nobody really looked at him and then we got him and he's going to end up being a superstar.
And he can handle, man. He can handle the ball too. And I know that's been a big thing for Painter, is wanting to have two ball handlers on the floor at all times. So, I mean, and he's listed at 200 pounds too. 6'3", really? 200. Yeah.
He does not seem like he seems bigger than 200.
I mean, so for reference, Fletcher's 6'5", 180 listed. Jeez. So
Fletch. He's a little guy. I haven't seen 185 since grade school. Holy shit.
You get extra plate in Thanksgiving. Come on, man.
That's absolutely absolutely crazy. So Will Berg, is he a newcomer?
Ish.
To the rotation, yeah. To
the rotation. Playing.
Yeah.
I feel like with Will Berg, he was just introduced to us as a rotational player kind of unfairly because mm-hmm. He had Ryan Kalkbrenner guarding him, who's 3-time Big East Defensive Player of the Year, which is no small feat. And he had to guard Ryan Kalkbrenner, who, you know, is a lot of people's pick for Naismith Player of the Year. And who went on to drop 49 points in his season opener.
Right.
He's played well. He's played efficiently. So he's 6-for-7 from the floor. 4-for-11 at the line. Not ideal.
That's going to have to get better.
I feel like, I mean, just it's going to sound like I'm quoting Painter here. He does a lot of things that you need to win, and his reputation has been a little bit tarnished by the fact that he hasn't been great from the line this season. Mm-hmm. And I mean, we saw early in the game against Yale, they were fouling him intentionally, in my opinion. Like, as soon as he caught the ball, they were just smacking him on the hand. And that's better than, you know, having a 7'2" guy dunk the ball on your head. So I totally get that. But I don't know. What do you guys think?
And if that's a strategy you want to employ, go ahead, get your big dudes in foul trouble and let Trey Kaufman Wren eat. So that's what'll happen. But I mean, to me, I put it in our thread. Berg is kind of essentially a freshman a little bit as far as actually getting playing time, being a rotational player. Like, yes, he's been in the because he's technically redshirt. He's been in the program for 3 years, but he hasn't really seen the sunlight in the first 2 years. So he's being asked to step up big time, and he's encountering that somewhat like a freshman, like a somewhat seasoned freshman. So like, people that expected him to come in and be Zach Edey are just like that's because leveled expectation.
I had somebody tweet me, or I saw somebody tweet like, "Oh, Will Berg needs to be just like Zach Edey was last year." I was like, "Well, that's kind of a big ask."
Yeah,
like, and they clarified, they were like, you know, not getting in foul trouble and like being able to score the ball, or I can't remember what it was, not being able to get in foul trouble and something else. But it was just funny the way that they worded it. I think it's a mix of things. I think that he's got some unfair expectations on him coming. You're the guy coming in after 2-time national player of the year, Zach Edey, that led Purdue to its first national championship. And I don't know when off the top of my head. And so there's that, but then you've also got like, I mean, you're, yeah, I don't know. I can, and then I can also see too where people are disappointed that yes, he's maybe not played an actual college basketball game in the 2 years that he was here previously, because you know he was behind Zach, but you know you got to practice against the two-time national player of the year, so surely you're going to come in and have some moxie to you, and you know, just maybe produce a little bit more. But so I can see it from both sides, but I think that there are extremes on both sides that are just ridiculous.
I think that, and I'm not trying to say that like he wasn't coached as well as Edie would be or something like that, right? But I think it's safe to say that probably a lot of the focus was put into Edie perfecting his game, and maybe now with him being the main, maybe not the main guy, but the main guy down low, he now gets the benefit of some of the Brandon Brantley teachings and things like that.
So he's getting priority. Is that what you're saying?
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Like I said, I'm not trying to like disparage the coaching staff or say they're doing anything nefarious.
No, but I think that's all fair. You only have one awesome, you know, coach in Brandon Brantley, and he's got to split his time and his energy across so many players. And in the past 2 years, it's made sense to have that person be Zach Edey for obvious reasons. So I get that. So we talked about Raleigh. We talked about CJ Cox, Will Berg.
Last thing I want to say too, sorry, before we move on from Berg, is I just want to highlight what you said, Frank, about his efficiency. Like, he's not getting the opportunities anywhere near what Edey was either, because Trey Coffman-Wren is the first up in the post. Braden and Fletch are obviously getting much more looks this year offensively. So don't judge Berg as much on his box score totals, but look at his efficiency.
Mm-hmm. That's all. Yeah, he's very, 6-for-7. I mean, we have not a lot of players outside Fletch who got it. We got to talk about Fletch for a minute. 9-for-12 from three to start the season.
That's crazy.
I mean, surely, like, that's not, he's not going to keep up at that pace, but.
No, but man. Like, he's definitely told the people who gave him crap last year when he went through a slump to go pound sand.
Yeah.
Well, the slump was interesting because he still finished the year as what, a top three three-point shooter in the Big Ten?
I think he was actually number one in conference play. He led in conference games. He was the leading.
I always kept getting it backwards because I knew he was one and Gillis was three, or Gillis was one and he was three, or something like that.
Yeah. Obviously, Fletch took a lot more than Gillis did, but I felt like he was unfairly attacked, especially when, you know, as Painter talked about, his gravity opened a lot of things up for other guys too.
Yeah.
Gravity.
Fun fact, you can measure gravity. There's
Can you really? Really
cool. Yeah, there's some really cool metrics around gravity and spacing, how much space you create for your teammate.
Big nerd asses.
Yeah. Well, last but not least, again, this is in no order, Jakari Harris, who his father is being represented on my jersey here. So,
oh, cool story, Frank.
Yeah. Jakari Harris, what have we seen from him? What do we like? What do we think he can improve on?
Yeah, I mean, he seems just like a really fluid shooter. Just seems like he naturally knows where to be on. It seems like he's really has really good basketball IQ, just knows where to be on the floor, gets himself open, takes good shots. I think it's just more about as far as his production, I think could be more if Brayden's sitting or anything like that, which really doesn't happen a whole lot right now. Brayden's playing quite a bit, but, would love to see him get a little bit more production in there, but that's just going to come with time. So, I mean, right now, I think he's got a great basketball IQ, gets himself in the right places, and it's just all about making it happen.
Yeah, for sure. I think that, I mean, he's obviously skilled, right? Like, you can tell that the kid knows what he's doing when it comes to basketball. He gets, like you said, gets himself in the right places. I think that he's done a lot of good things and just has to continue to do those good things.
Yeah, he's it's crazy how naturally he kind of slides into that Lance Jones void that he's left. Mm-hmm. Right? Because how do you fill that? And like Purdue's never had a I lost my train of thought. The Lance Jones fan club is showing up. Plays a lot like Lance Jones. Yeah, I was just saying that.
Holy words, Batman.
Yeah, the Lance Jones fan club. Thank you, Lance Jones fan club, for sharing that. But yes,
smart.
Totally lost my train of thought there. But, you know, it's like Purdue. Lance Jones was the most unique transfer Purdue has ever had, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah.
I think we were halfway there with David Jenkins and what he brought, but it's just amazing how seamlessly Harris has just slid right into that role. And I think we've seen Painter kind of shift away from, you know, that guy who's like, well, I want this guy on the floor all the time because he's a good defender, and maybe if he's a liability offensively or doesn't contribute offensively, I'm okay with that. To kind of now, you know, I want to have a guy who's good both ways. And I think Jakari Harris has been good both ways. I mean, from a production standpoint, Damon, I think you're absolutely right. I expected a little bit more out of him. You know, he's 3 for 10 from three, but I haven't seen him try to do anything outlandish. And, you know, from a guy in his position, I think I would rather him err a little bit more on the side of being conservative than trying to get too crazy. At least right now. 3 for 4 from two. He hasn't shot a free throw. So he did in the exhibition game where I think he
it is all. Funny that he's gotten exactly 5 points in the first three games, like 5, 5, 5.
It is.
They've all come when they're there. When the opportunity presents themselves, he takes it. He's opportunistic, I think. Mm-hmm. And we're not seeing him kind of hunt his own shot. Like we've seen from CJ Cox, where he'll attack you off the dribble and step back and hit that pull up mid range. And, you know, I'm going to switch back to CJ Cox for a second, cause we didn't talk about it, but his pull up mid range game is fascinating in that I feel like 3 or 4 years ago, paint's not going to be okay with that.
No,
but I feel like that's, you know, the mid range went away. I think everyone knows that, like, modern basketball, you want shots at the rim or you want shots on the perimeter. But now we're seeing the mid-range come back a little bit, and the reason why is because defenses are saying, okay, you can have that shot, so it's there all the time, and guys can be selective and opportunistic about when they take that shot and where they take that shot. So because it's always there, because no one's stepping out to contest it. But CJ Cox, man, he has that mid-range pull-up, and it's good. But
that was always Harris.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, that's always the thing, and you guys know that from last year, that was always the thing that drove me nuts was Purdue when they would play drop coverage, because it just looks like when you're watching the game, it's just like, oh, just take the shot, please, here, have this free wide open shot. And it just drove me nuts every time watching it, but go ahead.
I mean, so like the average mid-range goes in, 2 years ago went in, I think, 38% of the time. Last season,
I know, 42. But still,
it's creeping up because guys are, because that shot is there so much.
Yeah,
and it's just like the NFL now. You're seeing so many checkdowns. Why? Because they're not defending it anymore. So you're starting to see teams shift toward speedier receivers who can outrun guys, because quarterbacks are throwing it to the flat and throwing checkdowns more often. Mm-hmm. So it's just, you're seeing it more because defenses are inviting it more. And because they're inviting it more, they're starting to hit them a little bit more. So it's just this constant long-term chess game that's going on in the game of basketball. But, like, I mean, Kevin Durant, for example, like, you can't, it doesn't, like, he's going to hit that mid-range regardless. So, it's just a cool thing to see that flexibility and that mindset shift from Painter, because, like I said, 2 or 3 years ago, you weren't seeing a freshman, let alone come in and hit that, so, or even take that shot without going to the bench. So, love Painter, love what he's doing with these guys, and I don't know, I'm excited for these freshmen. I'm excited for all of them in different ways, but
I just think that I think that us as a fan base have to come to grips with that. We're probably going to lose a non-con game. I feel like that's a very normal thing to say for just about any team, but Purdue's gone. This is the fourth year now where going into the fourth year of not losing a non-con. That's probably going to happen this year with all these freshmen and everything. There's probably going to be some games that are ugly. I mean, that's just going to happen when you have so much new, so much learning going on this year. It's going to be a productive, it's going to be a good year, but it's going to be a learning year as well. So,
Yeah, I totally agree with that.
Yeah, so, I mean, about the non-con, we play Alabama at home right now. KenPom predicts a two-point win. Then we immediately turn around and go to Marquette, where KenPom predicts a two-point loss. So, and again, KenPom, you know, there's all sorts of variation in basketball, but he tries his best to capture as much of that as he can in his regression model here. But, you know, a two-point win is effectively a 50-50 game. You know, so these next two games, he's calling 50-50 games for Purdue. Mm-hmm. And Purdue has won a lot of 50-50 games in the last two seasons. A whole lot of games that were literally just a coin flip. And
that's where you got to rely on guys like Braden and Fletch and TKR and guys who have been in those games.
Mm-hmm. And the one thing I've seen from Braden this season is when it seems like the other team's going on a run, or it seems like things are getting a little restless and we just need a shot. We need a shot. We need to see a shot go in. He just does it. Like the timeliness of his shots. And we talked about that last season from Lance Jones, how he was kind of that guy. When, like, you know, a 10-point lead got cut to four, he hit the three, or he drove to the basket or got the steal just to kill that run. And we're seeing Braden do that. We're seeing Braden do that a lot this season so far. It's like, okay, Northern Kentucky cut the lead to four. Like, let's – and then he hits a three, or he drives to the basket. Or, I mean, it's so – I like
so
that.
So we're gonna start running into this issue now since the basketball season has started, which is the Marquette game will probably happen before we meet again because it's next Tuesday at 9 o'clock, and I don't think we're going to want a pod during a pregame. So
yeah, speak for yourself.
I think you're kind of setting up a statement that I want to make about the next couple of games, which is – this would be Braden Smith's chance to put his name firmly in the National Player of the Year consideration, because these are two top 15 programs, two, you know, Final Four contending programs that we have coming up that give him a chance to say, are you going to lead this team? Are you going to be the guy, like you said, Frank, that is going to carry us, is going to make the big shots, is going to keep us from going on droughts, is going to end the other team's long runs? He's going to make the big shot down the stretch at the end of the game. This is going to be his chance to do that. So, and I think he does that. I like our chances. I know we've won a lot of 50-50 games, but, you know, Alabama has not looked incredibly strong, right? A couple single-digit wins against lower-level foes. Marquette just beat Central Michigan at home by like 8 points. So they aren't exactly getting it. You know, as much as we're trying to get it together this year, you know, every team in the country has got new pieces they're trying to fit together. So, and I think that's where we've capitalized in years past, where we've won those 50-50 games. And to me, I lean towards who's your head coach? What's his experience in those games? And I'll take Payne over Shaka. I'll definitely take Payne over Nate Oates. So
I love totally Shaka, yeah. Oh, I do. Yeah. I like everything Shaka does. Like I think he's a pretty phenomenal coach. I like his game plan and scheming. But I just hope he sucks at it in a week.
I mean, and Marquette, why does Marquette seem like the new Florida State?
Ew, every year, bro.
I mean, how many times? Is this the third year in a row we've played Marquette?
At least?
Yeah. And I mean, maybe for me, I watched them play in person.
It's always a good game, though.
It's always a good game.
Oh, yeah.
This is a Marquette. This is a very different Marquette team without Tyler Kolek, without Oso Iguodaro.
Well, we've chosen this game. The Florida State thing was because ESPN kept saying
ACC that's the challenge. Just like every year, they were like, "Oh, you get Florida State, you get Florida State." Which I wasn't. I mean, of course, they were great. They're a great opponent. Mm-hmm. Their defense is great, but you know, some of their personnel. I think David Joplin, someone we're no stranger to. This will be our third year in a row playing him. Cam Jones, who is, you know, 9 for 17 from three. To start the season, so he always seems to play really well against Purdue as well. He was the guy, and like when I think back to the last two games, it's like you shut down Kolek, you contain Iguodaro, and he was the guy. It's like, all right, well, I'm gonna score 18. You know, I'm gonna step up and score that. Stevie Mitchell hasn't had, you know, the biggest role in the offense compared to what we've seen in recent years, but. Starting his off season 3 for 4 from three, he's only taken 15 shots, so not a huge role there. But then there's a bunch of newcomers. You know, they have a freshman I won't try to pronounce his name, but a freshman from Pittsburgh who's, you know, not having a lot of production offensively. Chase Ross, is he a transfer? No, I guess he just didn't play a lot his first season. So very different team, very, very different team than what we're used to seeing. And, you know, anytime you go on the road against a power four or power five in basketball, it's tough. It's going to be really tough. So we're going to learn a lot about this team in these next two games. I'm glad you said that, Russ. I didn't realize that it was Tuesday. So.
Yeah. Well, before we close, I think we have some commercials and some chit-chatting that we have to do and praise some of our sponsors here at the old podcast.
Yeah, let's play a couple commercials and we'll do some
before you thoughts. Before you play the commercials, though, I'm going to go ahead and do our thing about Cincy Blitzboards because we don't have a commercial for them. So make sure you get a Cincy Blitzboard. You can find them on Twitter. You can get any design, any logo, anything that you want on your Blitzboard. It's fun for tailgates. It's fun for any kind of party, any kind of, you know, family game night, whatever it is. They're a lot of fun. So check them out at Cincy Blitzboards on X.
Tell me, do you like to be fashionable? Do you like to look handsome or beautiful? Do you like being the best-dressed Purdue fan you know? Well, guess what? We got just the place for you. It's called martinvintage.com. And if you go there, you will find the best in Purdue throwback designs on the market. I'm telling you, if you want it, they got it. Basketball, football, Purdue Pete logos, anything and everything. And if you go to martinvintage.com and use code BXB at checkout, they'll throw you 10% off your order. Now, that's a great deal if you ask me. Tell them that we sent you, and they'll say, hey, you have a slightly above average taste in podcasts. Here's 10% because they're friends of the program, and we can't thank them enough. Again, martinvintage.com. Use code BXP at checkout for 10% off. Boiler up.
Attention all college basketball enthusiasts. Are you tired of just watching the game and ready to dive deeper into the stats and strategies that make college basketball so thrilling? Introducing CBBAnalytics.com, your ultimate destination for college basketball analytics. With CBBAnalytics.com, you'll have access to the stats and insights that you need to take your love for the game to the next level. From shooting percentages to player efficiency ratings, CBBAnalytics.com has it all. Get detailed player profiles, in-depth team analysis, player and team shot charts, and even in-game trends available all at your fingertips. Do you want to know how well Purdue shoots above the break threes with 10 or fewer seconds left on the shot clock? CBB Analytics has you covered. You want to see how different lineups perform in different situations? CBBAnalytics.com has you covered. You can get a free tier subscription, which allows you to see stats for just one team, but if you truly want to elevate your game knowledge, be sure to check out the Pro Tier subscription, which allows access to all 362 Division I teams. One of our favorite features is the in-game streaming system, which displays real-time stats, analytics, and even shot charts during live games. If you're ready to expand your basketball knowledge, check out CBBAnalytics.com today.
That music. Every time.
Yeah, we listen to that crap the entire setup for the damn show.
Yeah, we do. So speaking of CBB Analytics, I wanted to ask you guys a quick question here. We're only three games in, and stats haven't exactly leveled out yet. I could get into that and how many games that takes and all that, but I won't. Three games into the season, Russ, you may know this, you may have looked at this. CBB Analytics does a great job of producing their on-off stats. I know on-off is not telling of everything, but effectively what it means is how does a team perform with the player on the court versus off the court. Anyone want to guess which player boosts Purdue's performance the most when they're on the court this season? And how we're measuring this is net rating. So it's offensive rating minus defensive rating, and the difference between those two numbers. Which player this season boosts Purdue's performance the most?
Myles Colvin.
Good guess, Chris. What do you think?
Riley Burgess.
Russ, have you looked at this?
I know who it is. Yeah,
you know who it is.
I reiterated your point earlier about this player.
Yeah, Will Burke.
Oh, okay.
Purdue is 40.7 points better per 100 possessions with Will Burke on the court That's versus crazy. Off the court.
Keep him out there 40 minutes a game. I don't care.
Yeah, like I said, it's very early. It's very, very early right now. And these stats are they mean a little bit more when you've played a little bit more. This is what I'll say about that. I know a lot of people were tweeting that TKR had a plus minus of -9 in the game against Yale. And I won't even get started on plus minus and how silly of a stat that is. But I mean, when a guy drains a three in your face, when you contest it, I mean, that's going against your plus minus and you didn't do anything wrong. So one last thing I wanted to talk about.
Your teammate gives up a three when it's drained in their face when they're playing good defense and it affects your plus minus.
Yeah, that's the problem with plus minus is that there's 9 other players and 3 officials on the court. So it just sometimes it's like Caleb First last year was never on the court with Zach Edey ever. So he didn't get the benefit of being on the court with Zach Edey. So that affected his plus minus. So but yeah, one thing I wanted to talk about. I'm surprised it hadn't come up, but I had it on my list of things to talk about tonight. The paint crew notice. So just to set the table here, I don't know if it was from Mike Babinski. I heard it was from Mike Babinski. An email was sent to the paint crew basically saying, don't chant fire Walters was effectively what it was saying. And from what I've heard, it was just a slight modification of the email that goes out before every game. But it made its way across the internet and across Twitter, and people are saying, oh, look, this
fan base is
soft. Yeah, people are saying it's an attack on free speech. And my point to that is I fully support free speech. But there are things that I could say in, like, my workplace, for example, that I would expect to, you know, maybe no longer have a job if I said them. And so while I fully support free speech and the, you know, ability of college students to say what they want, I think holding them to a certain standard of conduct, just like we, all of us, are held at our jobs, churches, you know, social settings, isn't like an attack on free speech or anything like that. I don't think it makes the university look soft. I think it makes us look like we, you know, are trying to have a grip on what's going on at our games. And I mean, remember, Texas appealed to have the SEC and having people chant horns down be an unsportsmanlike penalty. And that was actually passed and then, you know, was eventually repealed. So like, we're not doing anything like that, but I don't know. What do you guys think?
Well, I think go ahead.
No, go.
This was not a serious comment at all. I was going to say, oh, well, if we need to, speaking of Texas, if we want things to change, we just have to throw stuff onto the field during a game.
There you go.
And then they'll do what we say.
Also valid.
So,
yeah.
So I think that, so I know I've heard comments about, Damon, I don't think you said this. I think it was a tweet you shared or like a tweet you put in the group chat. I can't remember. But if it is, I apologize for whatever you're about to get. So it was somebody somehow said like Babinski's more worried about the student section than he is about firing Walters or some crap like that.
I think it was beneath the paint.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. And my retort to that is both things are his job. The reputation and the brand of the university is his job. The coaching issues or non-issues, whatever it might be, is also his job. Like the simple fact that idiots want to say that Babinski doesn't care about the performance on the football field is asinine and belittling and downright disrespectful of Babinski, who's been a pretty damn good AD. And to jump off and be like, oh, Babinski doesn't care. He's more worried about what the students say. No, you look like an asshole is what it is. Like, shut up. This isn't freaking football. Worry about chanting how much IU sucks and less about what Walters is doing. Trust me, there's 100 guys in the football locker room that are more mad than any Purdue fan could ever dream about being. And I'm even talking about the former editor of Golden Black Illustrated, who's been going absolutely bananas on Twitter lately about stupid crap when at the end of the day, we all love the university. I've got, between me and my wife, we've got 3 degrees. We've spent a bunch of money for Purdue Athletics, John Purdue Club, all this other stuff. And then you're going to jump off and act like the athletic department or the athletic director doesn't give a crap about the football program. It's the single biggest freaking money maker of the damn athletics in the university. He knows that more than anybody else. And at the end of the day, when a dude's making $4, $6, $8, $12, $14 million a year, their whole livelihood is on the line. Their reputation's on the line. So stop being an asshole, support Bobinski, support the football team, and support the basketball team, and shut your damn mouth.
And it probably took him 30 seconds to write the email, if he even wrote it. So it's not like that's where all his time is being spent.
Sorry, I got on a soapbox there, but it just it pisses me off because at the end of the day, it is people making mountains out of molehills. No one in the Purdue sports realm is not cognizant of the fact that the football program product is a problem. An issue.
100%.
But trying to act like that people are like blind to it or not acknowledging it is crazy to me.
Russ, any thoughts?
So while that comment is I'm probably somewhere between where Chris just came from and where students chanting and yelling fire Walters and Bobinski doesn't care about the product of the football program, because we've talked about in our thread before that historically Purdue doesn't fire coaches before 4 years. Purdue doesn't fire coaches midseason. So, you know, yes, you can want your team to succeed while maybe not making the best decisions, right? Like, you know, a coach can want their team to succeed all you want, but if you're 1-7, 1-8, 1-9, you know, you get to the end of the season, you're 1-11, you're going to sit there and go, okay, well, some changes have to be made if we really are going to be successful, even though we want to be successful. So I stand somewhere in the middle there. Like, it's easy to sit there and look and go, hey, the stadium's still packed, so why do we need to change anything? We're still getting the money in. When it's like, okay, it's packed this year, but what does it look like next year if certain things don't happen or we don't see a performance change?
But no, I think it's ignorant and disrespectful to think that those conversations aren't happening in the back end, right? Those are the conversations and the things that are happening. Yeah. You know, we all deal with that in our jobs. The upper admin is, you know, we always wonder in our jobs, in our everyday jobs, why is the admin doing this? Why isn't the admin doing that? They probably are prepping for it. They're just not going to do it right now because it doesn't work. Yeah. We have 2 games left in the season, 3 games left in the season.
Yeah, I will say, though, because Frank said something similar to that, that sports is completely different than a normal job, though. Right. Because there's aspects of sports, like you talk about, like Texas high school football, where a coach loses and there's for sale signs all over his yard. Imagine if the local police said, okay, you're going to get thrown in jail for 2 years if you put a for sale sign in your head coach's yard because he lost the game. It'd be kind of ridiculous, right?
Wouldn't surprise me, though. I mean, but yeah, I agree.
But no, I just, my point is, like, I understand sports is different than everyday job, every day to day, but we don't know the back hallway conversations that are being had. We don't know the back channel communications that are being had. We don't know. For all we know, Walters could be fired already. He's just finishing the season.
Yeah, I mean, Bobinski was the one to relieve Hazel of his coaching duties in the middle of the season, about three quarters of the way through the season.
Yeah.
As well. So, yeah, I mean,
he might just be giving him the benefit of the doubt, letting him finish this out, but he could be gone already. We don't know that. That's the thing that I think people need reminded of, is that we're not privy to that information.
And I think that's what is frustrating. I think the only reason that I've really wanted a change in the middle of the year is, like, I know that it's not something that Purdue normally does. I know that he's got a large buyout, but we also know that Chris and his wife with their 3 degrees can cover that, you know, no problem.
Your high is donkey nuts. have you seen daycare costs? Holy shit, dude.
But anyway, I know that it's not a typical thing in that, you know, he's got a large buyout. However, I think that in my perspective, I'm like, oh, let's cut the cord now so that Purdue has a chance to get out ahead of any other bigger names that are going to let go of their coach at the end of the year, like potentially in Oklahoma, potentially a USC, potentially, you know, whatever schools that are out there. So I guess my main reason for wanting that midseason cut was just to give Purdue a better chance to get ahead of the program, whatever you want to call it, and get their names out there to a better pool of candidates rather than, okay, we waited till the end of the year, we let them go, but now we're also competing against all these other big name schools instead of taking that chance in the middle of the year. And I know that you're going to talk about, like, okay, well, who would have replaced Walters, you know, and I don't know all of that. That's just my reason for wanting him to be let go of in the middle of the season, is just so that Purdue could have gotten ahead of the curve and had a better chance to get somebody rather than competing against a lot of other bigger names that are probably going to be looking for coaches.
I don't think it matters one way or the other, because nobody's talking to coaches or prospective coaches until after the season's over anyway.
Maybe.
I mean, you might have some of those back channel things, but anything like big time official, like they can't, I mean.
But if those back hallway conversations are happening, then aren't they going to happen regardless? You know?
Yeah.
Like that's the way I mean.
Yeah. And that's my kind of my thought too. Like whatever's going to happen is going to happen. We'll know the Sunday or Monday after Thanksgiving.
Yeah. Yeah. And in all likelihood, we'll know if I expect a change to some degree.
I do expect it to change. I do think if I had to put my paycheck on it right now, I think Walters is gone. I just think right now we're trying to salvage what can be of a season. I mean, salvage it in a way of just like, honestly, at this point, it's a feel good story. Let the team and the coach play out who committed to him for this last season. Let the seniors play out with the coach that they've spent the last couple of years with. Some of these transfer guys, you know, guys like Hudson Card, stuff like that. Just let them run it out. And then we'll figure out what happens in the offseason when the offseason comes.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Because we saw what the chaos of, you know, the bowl game post Brahms exit looked like. And that's probably what the rest of the season will look like if you dismiss the head coach.
Yeah.
Painful.
Yeah.
All right, boys. I'm going to have to go.
Yep.
Well, yeah, it's about that time anyway.
Damon, you want to sign us off?
Oh,
yeah. So we've got a big game coming up on Friday against Alabama. I'm not sure. And then I think Russ said we play Marquette that Tuesday. So we're probably not going to be meeting next week, at least not on Tuesday. We'll reconvene and talk about if we're going to go live another day next week. And then Purdue does play Penn State in football. You know, that'll be a game. Hopefully we win.
3:30.
You know, we'll see. And yeah, so boiler up, hammer down, and we'll hopefully be talking about a Purdue win against Alabama next week. And of course, Russ has something else. Sorry, go ahead.
Get the cock. Get the peacock. Alabama game is on the peacock.
Everybody else has peacock besides you, Russ. Jesus
Christ. Alabama game is on the peacock.
Well, he's got to budget his money at the nursing home.
All right, boiler up, guys. Let's get these wins.